May is Fibromyalgia Awareness Month. It's important to raise awareness about this chronic and often debilitating invisible illness known as fibromyalgia. This month-long campaign is an opportunity to educate people about the symptoms, causes, and treatments of fibromyalgia, as well as to show support for those living with these and other related invisible illnesses. Through increased awareness, we can work towards better understanding and management of fibromyalgia and ultimately improve the quality of life for those who are affected by it. And now on to this week's episode.
So I went into my first session, which was with Ari Tuchman, and it was one of these standing room only. It was in a huge room, standing room only. I find a place on the floor and sit down, and I see the slide that says people with ADHD know what to do, but they just can't do what they know. And it was like an explosion in my brain, and realized that this was something I was challenged with and have been always challenged with.
Today, we have two special guests. Our first husband and wife duo, Mindy Katz and Dr. Jeffrey Katz. Mindy began working with adults struggling with ADHD as a life coach to grow her skills and knowledge and serve the community of those living with ADHD. She went back to school and earned her Master's of Social Work. Mindy has extensive experience and expertise in working with adults with ADHD using positive psychology, mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapies, and EMDR. And Dr. Jeffrey Katz is a child, adolescent, and adult psychologist and a leading expert in the field of ADHD, learning disabilities, and behavioral problems. He is also a foremost consultant and sought-after speaker for numerous medical, academic, business, and legal professionals and organizations. Dr. Katz is highly sought after by patients and their families for his expertise in ADHD, learning disabilities, and behavioral problems. He offers practical and proven ways to apply his knowledge about ADHD in the school, home, work, and other relationship settings. His patients include children from preschool through college, assessing for learning disabilities and ADHD, and in adults, evaluations, behavioral therapy, as well as family therapy. I got a chance to connect with Mindy and Jeffrey at the APSARD conference. For those of you who are not familiar with what APSARD is, it is the American Professional Society of ADHD and Related Disorders. Its goal is to improve outcomes for individuals with ADHD and their families by promoting research throughout the lifespan on ADHD and disseminating evidence-based practices and education. This is led by a diverse board consisting of global experts in fields such as psychiatry, epidemiology, ethics, coaching, psychology, advanced practice nursing, and pediatrics. Its goal is to work with ADHD patient organizations to heighten the public's understanding of ADHD to reduce stigma and further promote effective dialogue between healthcare professionals and patients. If you are in the medical community where you are caring for patients living with ADHD and related disorders, highly encourage you to consider going to their annual conference. If you are unable, they have a lot of great resources and webinars available online at APSARD.org. Without any further ado, please join me as we welcome Jeffrey and Mindy to the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having us.
So if you guys could maybe a little expand on your training and your background.
I'm a clinical psychologist, and I got interested in ADHD when I was in graduate school. We were studying behavioral therapy, existential, Freudian, and I had one professor who was talking about behavioral issues, and he talked about prisoners in jail, obviously, who seem to have a higher rate of stimulus seeking than others, than the general population. And I thought that was interesting. And I was working in a school at the time doing an internship doing testing and some therapy in a school. I did some testing one day for a kid who was in a special education class. And I walked in the class and they were playing Led Zeppelin. Well, I liked Led Zeppelin, but I thought it was unusual. So I asked the teacher later, I said, you know, you were playing Led Zeppelin. She says, oh, the kids calm down. When I play, you know, music, they settle down. So I thought about prisoners and kids in special education, kind of. But it seemed like there was some connection there. So I started looking into research about ADHD and came upon different theories, for example, at the time about arousal, that people with ADHD tend to seek stimulation because they're chronically under aroused or, you know, understimulated. Whereas the theory was that autism, kids with autism tend to get away from arousal. So they'll do hand flapping, other things to kind of calm themselves. And from that kind of, I got involved. I went to my first CHAD conference, the ADHD National Organization, and been doing that for many, many years. And then my practice has been primarily ADHD in kids and families, but I also evaluate adults, who I see many of.
So I'm much more of a late bloomer. In 2000, I got trained to be a coach, and I wanted to work with folks with ADHD. And even before that, Jeff had been going to these CHAD conferences every year. And I realized one year that we no longer had children at home, and I could go to the CHAD conference. And so I went to the first CHAD conference. I think we figured it's about 15 years ago. And so
it was Cleveland and Snowy, as I recall.
Cleveland and Snowy and the Rock and Roll Museum. Anyway, I went into my first session, which was with Ari Tuchman. And it was one of these standing room only. It was in a huge room, standing room only. I find a place on the floor and sit down. And I see the slide that says people with ADHD know what to do, but they just can't do what they know. And it was like an explosion in my brain, and realized that this was something that was I was challenged with and have been always challenged with, and decided to that this is the world that I needed to be in. And I ended up first getting a coach, then I became a coach. And about 5-6 years ago, I decided I wanted to be able to serve my ADHD clients better and in a more holistic way. And so I went and got an MSW and then got licensed. So here I am.
Yeah.
And I was also diagnosed with ADHD as an adult. After I'm already a specialist, people close to me pointed these things out to me. So I talked to my mom about it, she says, no, you're a doctor and you can't have that. I said, well, let me show you my school records. Because I remember all the time, never getting homework done. I'd get bored in class. I would just play with things and take apart pens, and springs would shoot across the room. And I was in the principal's office, you know, once a week, twice a week. So I realized, you know, it does fit me well, which I think is helpful in understanding people who have ADHD. I was a good kid, but just had no focus, you know, and my parents never punished me. They would just say, we know you can do better. We know you can do better.
They just guilted you into
That's
it.
That's right. Well, I tried to. And then I've had the opportunity going to these CHAD conferences to slowly get more and more involved in the organization. So I'm on the board of directors, the co-chair of the public policy committee, and I'm on the professional advisory board. And I kind of stick my nose into a lot of things. But the best part about it for me is I get to learn, because I'm not a researcher, but I get to learn from the people who are doing the research and who are the bigger experts in the field, really. So I'd like to think I get knowledge, and I think many does too, by going to conferences and so on.
Yeah, and we got a chance to meet at the APSAR, the American Professional Society for ADHD and Related Diagnoses, just as the time of the recording was about 3 weeks ago, and that's how we got connected. Can you tell us what CHAD is?
Well, CHAD is Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, and it is the largest advocacy group for ADHD in the country. And we have members from all over the world, but it is primarily U.S., and CHAN offers programs for parents, parent training programs, teacher training programs.
Support groups.
Support groups is probably the biggest thing. We have support groups all over the country. If you go to the CHAD.org site and you look at resources, I believe it is, or you can look up your state. But not every city has a CHAD group, has a CHAD chapter, but even if you're not aware there is one, there are ones that are set up on a national basis that you can be involved in. And CHAD also has a contract with the Center for Disease Control to be the National Resource Center for ADHD. So we are the National Resource Center. So if you call CHAD or National Resource Center, you get the same place. They have health information specialists. So if anybody has a question about ADHD or concern, if they call, they'll talk to a health information specialist. And if they don't have the information, they'll get the information and get back to the person. So it's a very, very good resource. In terms of what Chad is doing kind of briefly, they recently got involved in the past couple of years looking into adult guidelines for ADHD. So there are no national guidelines here for how do you assess an adult for ADHD and how do you treat an adult for ADHD. And there's much more evidence now that the health outcome for people with ADHD is significantly poorer than that of adults without ADHD. And there are many studies, particularly from like Norway and those countries that have a database of every illness anybody has had over the years. And so people can look at studies looking at, you know, 100,000 people and look at trends. And at the same time, Russell Barkley, who recently retired, but was a preeminent researcher in ADHD, had also looked at studies and some of his longer term studies, and also found this disparity in the health outcomes. He spoke at AFSARD, you know, a few years ago, and I talked to him afterwards. I had known him, and that, you know, Chad was interested in taking care of this. So we started a project to develop guidelines, because if we wanted to push along a public policy, federal policies, or to make a case for how important it was for ADHD to be studied and to be understood and to be treated, there need to be guidelines. In the meantime, people at AFSARD, unbeknownst to us, were actually kind of starting that on their own. They're more of the scientist side of it. Now we're working together where AFSARD is developing the basic guidelines. And Chad is going to start to push it out. The person we are involved with from the REACH Institute is an expert. How do you make something like this become nationally recognized and used, you know, by insurance companies, you know, so that when you go to the internist, one of the questions is, have you ever had these? And then, you know, you get a screening for ADD. That's what we'd like to see.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I want to briefly interrupt the podcast to inform you about the Fibromyalgia Starter Pack, which is now available. If you are new to this podcast, it categorizes the episodes in a way that it's more beneficial for those new to fibromyalgia. You can access the link in the show notes to learn more.
For those of you who are not familiar, APSARD stands for the American Professional Society for ADHD and Related Disorders, and has an annual conference that was just held in the middle of January that I get a chance to go to and listen to the latest research in ADHD and have great connections with experts and colleagues who are leaders in the world of ADHD and related conditions. Dr. Katz shared some insights that he had with his own liver issue that he was getting medical help with, and a conversation and the insightful conversation he had with a liver specialist. Dr. Katz shared insights with a liver specialist he was seeing for his own medical condition and applying that to patients who are struggling with chronic medical conditions, in this case, chronic liver disease, which often has a connection with lifestyle choices and addictions.
I used to have a liver issue. It's in remission. But I happened to get in with one of the world's specialists in liver, you know, diseases. And, you know, so I saw him every 6 months and then once a year. But we were talking one time and I said, you know, what's the biggest problem you have with liver patients? He says, well, they don't follow the treatment, you know? You know, he told me, you know, lose weight, exercise, right? You know, do these things, eat right, and that's going to be helpful. So he said most of his patients and the ones of the liver transplant units, that's an area they have problems. And it made me wonder, I wonder how many of them have ADHD and have trouble following through on the treatment, much less having obesity, like you said, or you know, already having a higher incidence of disease. They have trouble following through. And what do they call them? I guess treatment failures, you know, But if they knew that they were ADHD or had ADHD, and if the physician thought about, if this person is not following their treatment regimen, I wonder if there's something else going on for them. And either to know when to refer or even knew at that point what to do to look at that a little bit closer. So Chad wants to kind of get into that space. We had a symposium a few years ago. There were people with the American Heart Association, and they have an interest in ADHD. You know, so there are connections out there. And just like you're talking about fibromyalgia, there are connections out there with other disease states. And we're very interested in those connections.
To just summarize what you said is that there is research, you know, with Dr. Barkley, with the socialized medicine systems in Norway, Sweden, that are tracking these databases and can tell the difference in health outcomes. Because I'm a pediatrician and an internist, and you see children and adults, there are words that are used that often don't even translate, if you may often be right out there in the open. But if you don't have it framed appropriately, you will miss the obvious that's right in front of your nose. So what do we call a child who doesn't do his homework repeatedly, despite all of the supports?
Well, I'm a psychologist, and, you know, people talk about, oh, ADHD is overdiagnosed, and everybody's got this stuff. And, you know, my response is, particularly mothers often are the ones who want their kids to come in, and fathers are much more reluctant generally. And I think that's because mothers spend a lot of time, much more time with the kids. In general, fathers go to work and they come home and they can be loud at night, the father, and get a kid quiet and doesn't understand why mom is complaining about during the day. But as a psychologist, I tell people, you know, it's not, oh, your child has ADHD. What do you need to do? It's, you know, you're coming to me because something's not working right. And my job is to figure out what that is. Oh, it could be depression, it could be anxiety, it could be trauma, it could be family issues. Yes, that's all possible, but at the same time, it could also be ADHD, so you don't leave that part out. And doing a good evaluation, I can see kids or adults with anxiety, with depression and trauma, but also if they have ADHD, you don't say, oh, it's everything else, it's not the ADHD. Well, ADHD has nothing to do with it. No, you treat the issues, right? And what I find with ADHD, particularly when parents are bringing in kids who seem to be out of control and oppositional, it's generally once, if they have ADHD, once you treat the ADHD, those things seem to go away and things are in much better control. And the kid is doing better at school, feels better, like with adults also. Some people come in and say, you know, they've been treated for depression for years or anxiety for years, and things only get so far. But then if they also get diagnosed with ADHD and that's treated, it's very interesting to see how much their depression and anxiety goes down or goes away, because it was really secondary to the problems that were caused by the ADHD. And of course, everybody blames themselves. Yet, you know, if they think there's something wrong with them, there's the topic of rejection sensitive dysphoria, right? And that's really, thank you, Mindy, for kind of getting in that in my head a little bit more, because it is so prominent with the people I see and the kids I see who they, you know, some of them, you know, get depressed and more inwards. And some of them, I saw a little kid yesterday and he blows it out in explosive rages. And as he's being angry talking, I passed this paper out to the parents and they were like, that's definitely him. Little things set him off and he takes it personally as if he's being attacked. And that's after a long history of, you know, every little thing the kid was doing, he was, you know, not treated for ADHD, was kind of out of control. Would you add anything?
I don't work with children.
Children become adults.
One of the things that you know, talking about the health consequences in when you work with adults who were kids at some point and say, you know, how many teachers said, boy, if you just applied yourself
And when that, the phrase non-compliant patient, that's what we call them as doctors, the person who is not following through on the regimen, especially, and they're a non-compliant patient. We have a homework, get a glucometer, check your blood sugars. Here's what you should eat. Here's how, but they, you know, don't follow through. Mindy, you went to that conference, getting back to what you initially said, and there was a slide that was up there. Can you elaborate on?
So the slide was, people with ADHD know what to do. They just can't do what they know. And so I think that's what we're talking about is we know we need to eat better. We know we need to be more compliant, but the problem is not being able to, and refer that to executive function issues, where getting started, initiating is a problem, and then even starting and stopping is a problem, the technical term, persistence of effort. And so, you know, what I do is help people often figure out how to get started and how to do the things that they're struggling with. Because, you know, you hear people talking about, I'm on the couch, it looks like I'm sitting here doing nothing, but I'm working really hard just to get to the next task or to get up and change what I'm doing. So it doesn't look like there's a lot of effort, but internally, it's really, that's where a lot of the struggle is for getting started and doing the things that we know we're supposed to do. Most folks with ADHD that I work with, they don't need another seminar in organizing because they have 32 books on it already. And so they just need to be able to find one place to start. And from Mary Salanto's work, what she says is, if you're having trouble getting started, the first step is too big, right? So, you know, if you are trying to exercise more, the first step might be putting on your sneakers. It's not getting to the gym and doing a great workout. It's starting. And then how do you get out the door? And then how do you get to your car? And so with all these health-related activities, it's where do you start to make it the smallest step so it's not overwhelming, so that you can find some success and build on that as you build that muscle of being able to start and do things.
If I can add to that, motivation is a big issue. And I guess we'll talk about that in a moment. But, you know, adults come in, Mindy has more experience. She's much, so much better with adults than me. But they've had criticism all their lives for exactly what you were saying. And so when I'm working with the kid in the school, I said, this kid come to the meeting. No, because the first thing teachers are going to say, don't you know you're supposed to do this and that and hand them this? And the kid goes, yeah, I know. But they can't do it. And they can't do it at the time it's needed either. They internalize this. There's something wrong with me. I'm not good. As opposed to, there's a reason this happens to me. And it's not great to have this reason, you know, ADHD, but it certainly makes sense. And it gives some space for what to do. Of course, parents will say, okay, now that you know you're ADHD, do what you need to do. No. That's not what it is. You know, that is the problem. And we have to accommodate around it or find ways to help motivate the person. So the support, you know, and for other people to understand, and that's an advocacy part of ADHD, is to understand the disorder.
Mindy, can you share a typical client that you work with?
So generally, people come for help when things start to fall apart. Like a lot of folks have systems and, you know, things that are going okay, and then something happens. So for a lot of women, it's perimenopause, menopause. Some it's divorce, changing in their lifestyle. Some it's when they have kids, all of a sudden they have 32 million more things to do and think about. Sometimes it's a job-related thing that they've figured out their job and, you know, it's going fine. They lose their job and starting all over, creating all those systems that support them, you know, have fallen apart. So people come usually after something starts to not work anymore. Most people come to me and say, I want to be more organized. But that is not what they need, right? So a lot of what folks need is to be able to see themselves and accept themselves for who they are, and that life is not going to be perfect. They may never be Martha Stewart. As I point out, Martha Stewart is not coming to your house. She's not coming to my house. We've got to just make this on our own. Martha Stewart has a team of hundreds of people to make her look great. And we're just doing it on our own. So a big piece of it is accepting that this is how we are. Because for so many years, many people have been told that they're broken. And the common sentence is, why don't you just whatever? And if it was that easy to just do that, we all would have done it, right? But it's not that easy. So we have to figure out different ways and set different expectations and to be kinder to ourselves. So most people do come with the, if I could just get organized, everything would be fine. That is often not really the root cause of what they're struggling with.
And then the root cause may be some underlying ADHD.
The executive function issues where they're having trouble getting started. I think one of the biggest issues that I see is not being able to prioritize. And so you look around, everything's a fire. You don't know where to start. Often people start at the wrong spot. They start at the easiest thing rather than the most urgent or important thing. Or they get fixated on one thing and forget about all the other things. Or get so overwhelmed that they do nothing. And so that's where the ADHD can come into play. I see prioritizing as the biggest struggle that folks have.
You mentioned about executive function. I guess I'm not sure if everybody who's listening understands that. So the executive cognitive functions are basically things that help regulate you so that, you know, and so some of them is being able to get started on a task. There's also emotional control. So a lot of people with ADHD get emotionally dysregulated. You know, emotions are big. And it could be happy, happy, big, or it could be sad, 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 or angry. But it can be uncontrolled emotion, difficulty transitioning between tasks, or moving from one thing to another. Working memory is a major one. So if you're working memory, if you are not being able to, and it's not just can you remember numbers, it's being able to process and think about a problem and the different aspects of a problem, you know, at the same time. But if that is very difficult for you, then you don't know where to go. Things don't actually get into your short-term or longer-term memory. And it's a working memory. And it's like, I go back to kids again, but even adults, because I also, like I say, evaluate adults. I have one now who is in medical school. And so she's kind of reached that point, as Mindy was saying, where now it's become overwhelming. You know, she's very, very, very bright. But reading is a problem for her. She can read, she can understand, but when she has to read a long passage in a timed amount, she cannot get through it. And if you give her extra time, she knows the stuff. She just needs that time to process it. And people with ADHD often have a slower processing time. So she's looking for accommodations at school and she'll be able to get them because she'll be a great doctor, right? But she's got to get through this period. So other ones, working memory, planning and organization, getting started on task initiation, of being able to organize your tasks. So these are the executive functions that help us control our behavior. And that is really kind of what the understanding is now of ADHD, that that's what it's affecting. And also motivation. Like Mindy was saying, somebody can lay around and maybe you're thinking about these, but actually getting up and going becomes an issue.
Dr. Katz shares the story of a patient who was trying to get evaluated for ADHD, but because of his ADHD, the diagnosis was being delayed. He was procrastinating.
Before Mindy got involved with the guy who was ADHD, I diagnosed him. He was a computer geek, but I have forms to fill out to go through this diagnostic process. And every week he'd come in, well, I didn't get the forms done. I thought about it. And, you know, one discussion with him was his wife's upset with him because he's not getting his billing on the computer business done. And I said, well, you know, maybe you get a recorder and he says, I got five of those things. I still don't use them. What's the point? Right? So he's not getting these things. I finally said to him, look, I know how to help you with this because I knew who he had told me who his biggest competitor in the area was. And he hates the guy, right? I said, write me a check for $100 and write it out to this competitor and write on the bottom, take you and your wife out, you know, for a wonderful dinner. And I said, give me the check. And then if you don't have the forms back in a week, and he agreed to all this, if you don't have the forms back in a week, I'll send it, you know. The next day I walk into the office, 9 or 8 in the morning, and the forms are stuffed under the door. And next time I see him, I said, what happened? He says, at 3 a.m., I woke up. I said, no way am I going to have him send that money. He worked on those forms, rode over to my office, stuffed them under the doors, and went back home. Motivation is something that, and how to build motivations for yourself and understand what motivates you is one of those things that I think is very important for kids and adults too.
Yeah, and adults often struggle with motivating themselves because, you know, it's hard to be accountable to yourself. So finding other ways to be accountable, because we let ourselves off the hook very easily and very often. So creating the scaffolding where you're accountable to somebody else can be really helpful.
That's where we will end this week's episode. We will continue the conversation next week. The three key take-home messages from this week's episode. One is that people with ADHD often know what they should do, but struggle to follow through with their knowledge due to executive function issues such as getting started, prioritizing, and persistence of effort. ADHD can have significant impact on individuals' lives, including difficulties with organizations, emotional regulation, transitioning between tasks, and working memory. And lastly, acceptance and understanding are crucial in supporting individuals with ADHD. Instead of solely focusing on getting organized, it is important to help them see themselves for who they are, accept their strengths and challenges, and find ways to accommodate and motivate them in their daily lives. I hope that this podcast and this episode has been enriching for you and for your loved ones. If you have any questions, thoughts, feedbacks, please email me at drmichaellenz@gmail.com. Until next week, go Team Fibro.